All right, Jack, welcome. So I'm gonna give a little background to this, which is that so I had been a huge baseball fan growing up, but around sixth grade, two things happened that kind of killed it for me. One was there was basically a strike, players didn't play, season ended in 94. And at the same time, this is the first year you had to like try out for Little League. And that meant I didn't make Little League. So I was like, all right, enough of baseball. I set it to the side for many years, went, built my career. And at a certain point, I realized I needed a hobby that didn't stress me out, like learning instruments and things. You're always like guilty if you're not doing it. So I was like, I really loved baseball. Let me get back into it. We just moved to the mainland Pennsylvania, and the Phillies had just gotten Bryce Harper. And so I said, all right, this is a good time to get back into baseball. But one of the things I realized, having seen a game, like a Padres game or something on my honeymoon years before, I was like, it wasn't that cool. And I realized it's because I didn't know any of the players anymore. I wasn't invested in any of the teams. So it's like, all right, I gotta like enrich my baseball knowledge. And somehow I stumbled upon your podcast, High Hopes. And I listened to a bunch of other Phillies podcasts, a bunch of other baseball podcasts, but like that was the one where I was like, all right, this grabbed me. It makes me feel like I'm having the coolest conversation with like the coolest friends who are just really into sports. They know a lot, but they're not like insiders or something. And that was like basically how I lived through, you know, the seasons ever since. And so I wanted to have you on basically as an excuse just to talk baseball because I don't get to do it that often.
Awesome.
But also because I think like you and James, your co-hosts, are really skilled at what you do. And I teach people how to communicate in writing and speaking. So I thought maybe we could delve into some of that. So first of all, thanks for the memories, the good times and the bads. And I'd love to hear just sort of how you what you're doing now, but how you ended up there.
So it's a bit of a journey. I've gotten super lucky along the way. Like for my age to kind of be where I am, you know, when a lot of people get into this business, like it just takes a while, and you gotta stick through it, and you gotta do all that. I mean, I started in college like a lot of people. You know, I had a podcast, I had a radio show, I wrote for the website. I, you know, just did whatever I could to get my name out there, had a Twitter and all that kind of stuff. And then, I was able to land an internship in college at a local radio station here in Philly. And that's actually where I met James. So I met James there while he was working there. And the first conversation we had was actually about baseball. It was like, because I followed James on Twitter, and I was like, oh, he's a fantasy baseball podcast. And naive me, I was like, oh, everyone loves baseball. And then I realized, no, they don't. Not everyone loves baseball as much as I do. So, you know, me and him just began our friendship there, and met John Marks as well. And I went back for my senior year of college, and I just kept in contact with those guys. You know, there's such like a big thing about networking now. I'm like, oh, I've got a network. Well, you know, I didn't treat it as like a networking thing. I just was like friends with them. And you know, I was able to keep in contact with those guys. And when I was out, I you know, was making dog bones for my dad for 8 months. And I like was just working in a church kitchen from like 8 a.m. to 5, making these dog biscuits, but listening to sports radio. And I just kind of figured out, you know, what works, what doesn't. And then was lucky enough to get my foot in the door at WIP. And you know, I was doing street team stuff, which basically meant like you show up to the event or a remote broadcast like 2 hours before they even get there. You set it up, you tear it down, but it's an excuse to be at the station. So I was able to work my way up from there, start producing. Was producing like 12 to 6 a.m. on Friday and Saturday nights. And it's just
All
like,
right,
wow, this is
paying your dues.
this is really going through it. But you know, has the host let me talk on the air, and that was awesome. And then you know, I just the evening show opened up. One of the evening show producer left, and I was able to slide it in. So I had a full-time job producing in Philly within like, I don't know, like 8 months of starting to work there, which is really fast. And just kind of worked my way up from there. James and I started the podcast around then, or actually it was John and James started it. And then, and they brought me on as a producer, and then John just became too busy. So James and I took it over and turned it into what it is now, which is like our favorite thing to do. And then the afternoon show producer was leaving to go back to Columbia, and I was able to work my way into there. So now I produce the afternoon show on WIP, and I host High Hopes.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, I did half-ass research, which is basically scrolling back through the High Hopes pod feed to hear your earliest thing.
Yeah.
So that was, I guess, 2017 at some point. I forget what month, but you were the producer and got to chime in, I think, like five sentences. Yeah. But I was pretty impressed because, I mean, I wasn't aware of what you were doing before that, but you already sounded like you, right? You had the kind of rhythms down. You were making, you know, relatively concise observations with like a good energy. Whereas, I mean, most people, particularly if they just get started in radio or podcast, it takes a long time to find that voice. But mm-hmm. It sounds like, I mean, you had been doing stuff for a while by then. And as you said, kind of listening for what works and what doesn't. How developed were your kind of your approach to radio by then?
You know, it's so funny. I genuinely just, whenever I talked, it was just like, this is how I sound. And, you know, if people like it, they like it. If they don't, they don't. I would say that I kind of developed a sarcastic slash saying everything with a smile, you know, inside jokey kind of tone, I guess. I've definitely worked on like deepening my voice a little bit and not being rushed in a way. I
struggled with that one for that. I mean, that was my big failing. You know, I used to do TV and they're like, you got to like, you're only going to have a few, you know, like 10 seconds to get into point. So I'd like, all right, well, let me get in 30 seconds of content. And it was a complete disaster. And so kind of like having that high energy, but relaxed feel to it was is a work in progress.
Yeah, no, and with radio, especially like late night, or you know, yeah, I at that point I hosted a podcast where it's just like me talking to myself, so I got kind of used to it, talking to myself and trying to figure out how a conversation with yourself can be interesting to someone listening, which is like a weird kind of like radio, and people will ask me. You ever get nervous or whatever? Because our station, we're broadcasting to maybe 100, like I would say a couple, at least 10,000, or at least 10 to 50, maybe more thousand people. Like we're broadcasting to a ton of people in the city of Philadelphia. So like people ask me if I ever get nervous, and I always say no, because I feel like I'm just talking to my two friends and hoping that the people out there enjoy it, which is like a really fun way to look at this whole thing. But I would say like, I think just the more I talked, I would like sometimes listen back and say, I don't like that. I don't like that. And then, just kind of found it, found my voice. I'm still developing my voice. Like I'm definitely not a finished product here. But yeah, it first was natural, but I needed to slow down and I needed to, you know, not sound so high pitched. So I would say like I've worked mostly on that.
One of the other things that you do that I find like as a listener, it's really enjoyable, but it also kind of like creates a little subculture within the Phillies world, is there's these little slogans or bits that are very, very Jack associated, like feels like a loss. So for those who don't know, 90 times out of 100 during a Phillies game, Jack at some point, particularly if they're winning, well, tweet feels like a loss. And it's you can explain it, but it's basically some reverse psychology, but it's just kind of a fun way that I think also taps into Philadelphia's deep sense that our team is destined to blow even sure things all of the time.
Yep.
But I want to talk about that kind of thing from a baseball angle in a little bit, but just from a broadcasting angle, how do you think another bit that you did was kind of this longstanding thing where we went on this cool streak last year of winning and you were like running the entire time as, you know, paying penance and taking credit for it. So how do you think about kind of the role of those things in making kind of the broadcast more fun and kind of creating this world of like, all right, these are the High Hopes listeners. These are, you know, the Jack Fritz fans who can kind of like share in these cute little inside jokes.
To me, like it has, people are going to, if, all right, if we're laughing, then we hope that our listeners are laughing. And usually that's how it goes. So, you know, I'm more of like a fun loving kind of guy. Like I'm pretty easygoing and kind of sarcastic. And I just think that, you know, I find most baseball coverage to be absolutely brutal. Like I can't stand it. Like it's just, everything's, oh, it's the guy's war, or it's like, you know, it hasn't been fun to talk about. And, you know, I would go back and I'd watch like Mike and the Mad Dog tapes, and they're this big radio show on WFAN, and they just straight up nerded out about baseball and like spoke about it passionately on the radio every single day in New York, in the biggest baseball market in the city. And like, I just feel like there hasn't been that kind of baseball coverage since, you know, whether people have lost interest, whether everything has to be about analytics and all this stuff. And I always wanted High Hopes to just be like two guys that love baseball, that love talking about baseball. Like we'll do the nerdy analytics stuff because that stuff's important. But we want to have fun talking about it. And when you're talking about those kind of bits, like it's important to create a community. And that's what it's all about, creating a community with your listeners and developing something more than just, hey, let's listen to this podcast. Like, no, like we want to know what Jack and James are talking about. We want to know, you know, what's the next crazy thing they're going to try to pull off. And then hopefully if Phil's go on a run and all that stuff. And, you know, I do think it's important for shows to have an identity so that listeners know what to expect. Like I think the ethos of our show is like, James is the calm down guy and the level headed and all that
skeptical
stuff. Yeah. And because he's been burned a lot in his old age. And
I'm exactly James's age within months.
I know.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Very sorry. You're all so old. And then there's me who, you know, I'm going to talk myself into the team. I believe in the team. They'll figure it out. So, you know, I think that listeners know like that kind of thing, and they kind of know where I'm going to be. And then, you know, if I like diverge from that, then people think it's like, wow, what's going on? He must be like serious. You know, like when I melted down about Scott Kingery at the opening, after opening day last year, it was like, you know, it's kind of one of those things. So,
well, just as an aside, your first High Hopes appearance was an endorsement about Scott Kingery being key to the Phillies' future for years to come. So that sometimes predictions don't pan out.
And I am living proof of that. I mean, Pavetta, just like there's just the list goes on and on. But it's also important to have opinions and stick to them and all that stuff. So yeah, I don't know. It's just the running thing. I genuinely have no idea. Like I just was like, I think this is funny. You know, they won two straight. I run my two longest things, and you know, let's see. And then they kept winning, and I was like, oh boy, here we go.
Well, the best part of it is it's such a baseball thing, right? Because superstition is so much part of the game. Like, all right, I did that and it worked. I better keep doing it.
I mean, growing up, I mean, playing baseball, I'm all superstitioned up. Like, I mean, I've talked about it a ton on the pod, but like I had a special seat for the LA World Series, and I don't think they win that World Series if I wasn't in that seat. So it's just kind of been my whole life.
So, well, you raised something that I think is an interesting question. So I'll give my answer, but I want to hear your answer first, which is why do you think people listen to your stuff?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that, you know, I think people listen because I think that people think I know what I'm talking about. And I work really hard to know what I'm talking about. Like, I try not to just throw stuff out there, especially with, cause I think podcast is different than radio. Like podcasts, if people are going to your podcast and especially a sports specific podcast, like for people to want to listen to it, you got to really know what you're talking about. And you got to really, that's how you stick out. Like you don't stick out by just giving baseline, you know, information, I'd say. Like you got to, I think nerding out and because people like radio, you can kind of make a mistake almost. And because like, you're driving your car, you'll turn it on and you want to hear what the general talk is. But like podcasts, you're specifically going out to find Phillies content or you're going out to find Eagles content. Like you're going to find that thing. So, you know, I think with us, I think we give smart opinions, but I also think that we are, you know, easy people to listen to. Like we're not trying to fool anyone. You know, we just like to have fun and mess around, talk about baseball and all that stuff. So, you know, I think people listen because it's an easy listen and they listen because, you know, if we can make someone laugh and we can make someone think, I think that's a good podcast. So that's what I at least try to do everyone.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree with that. I'm going to ask you about the kind of the research side of things, because that certainly jumps out. I mean, I gave the essence of my answer before, which is like, it's like sitting with like friends who really know what they're talking about, but it's like a fun conversation you'd have with them. And it, but in particular, if I was going to drill down a bit more, like I find myself waking up the next day and if the game went really well the night before, or I mean, you guys don't do it every day, but like, if, you know, if the week has gone really well, then I just want to relive that with people who are going to like help amp up my excitement, help, you know, get me excited for the future, explain maybe some stuff I didn't notice about why things went well and mm-hmm. what we need to look forward to. And then if things don't go bad, I'll be honest, sometimes I won't listen to you guys if things went bad because I don't want to think about it anymore. But yeah. Often it'll be because it's like, all right, I just need somebody to share the pain with me. So it's just this like, this realm of, it's very much like a personal relationship as a listener that, you know, we're kind of getting vicariously through the interaction between you and James. But the research is really important, or the knowledge that you guys have, like, you know, you guys clearly pay a lot of attention to baseball, have like a lot of context to evaluate different things that are going on. And, you know, some people like their kind of competitive advantages, you know, they're a journalist who's like hanging out in hushed hallways and like they, you know, have the latest gossip 2 seconds before everybody else or something like that. And but I think your guys is more like the ability to put things in context in a way. And I find that really helpful because as somebody who like was never like a master of the game, I never like really got beyond just being a little kid watching it going, oh, those guys hit a home run or something like that. Mm-hmm. To be able to like see, you know, right, what was, you know, the important turning point of the game, or that, you know, player that I was really impressed with because he had like 2 good innings. Oh, by the way, didn't you realize that like for the last 5 years, like he does this and then falls apart, you know, midway through the season. So it's that kind of how much like new research or kind of like planning are you doing before you sit down to a broadcast versus how much is just this is the result of like lifelong interest in the game?
You know, what's funny is I don't like do a crazy amount of research for the podcast. Like I'll say I have pretty good memory retention, you know? So like I'm on Twitter all the time, which is fine, I guess. It's just, it's part of the job. So it's fine. But I'm on Twitter all the time. Obviously, you know, when it comes to watching games, like I think baseball almost more than any other sport, like if you're not watching the games and you're expecting to sell your audience on like, you know what you're talking about, like they can tell. I mean, baseball is one of those sports that you can just tell if someone's like watching or not watching because of like the little intricacies that happen or who's playing well, who's heating up, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I think it comes down to watching games. And then I do write out like if I see something or I read something or I have a thought that I want to flesh out, like I'll put it in a notes app on my phone and just so I can make sure that I can bring this up again down the road. So I would say like the research isn't really like mind boggling. You know, I think with James does a nice job of knowing where I, you know, knowing my strengths or whatever, and kind of just like laying out the topics what main things to hit on. And like, we just know what to hit on. Like, we know this is the main storyline. Let's talk about this, because honestly, we also, James and I also work in radio. So we're doing that 24/7, which is like listening to Girardi and it's, what did he say today? And listening to the players. So like, we kind of live in it. Like, we live our radio shows all the time. And then High Hopes is like an extension of that, to where it's like, you know, it's like our little side project that we like, it's that we love doing. So it's like our whole life is baseball and sports and talking about it. And then High Hopes is just like the extension slash like nerdiness of all of that kind of culminating. So yeah, it's honestly just never really being off and always being on. And that's like kind of the research of it all.
So this is kind of a random question, but so I, as an author, I thought I have like the coolest job. And so like, I would like meet new people and they'd be like, what do you do? It's like, oh, I write books. And like, I expect them to think that that's really cool, because to me, that was like the coolest thing ever. What's your experience of going out into the world when people ask what you do and you're like, oh, I'm in sports broadcasting, or however you describe it? What does that look like?
Well, it's certainly not the worst conversation starter. You know, like, I don't have one of those boring 9-to-5 jobs. So it honestly, like, this whole thing's still so weird to me, where people like know who I am. And like, the funniest is when people know the bits. Like, when people know the bits, it is the funniest thing ever. Like, we had two High Hopes things this summer, one at the brewery and then one at the ballpark. And like, people were just like saying what I say back to me. And I was like, what is this? You know, it's hilarious and it's awesome. Like, who let the Phils get hot, or feels like a loss, or, you know, anything else that we've done. And that's still weird to me. Just cause I'm nothing special. Like, I'm just a guy from Westchester that like loves the Phillies and gets to talk about them. And that's still so weird to me. But it's fun. It's cool. It's certainly not boring.
Tip I learned when I lived out in Southern California, and I met a few celebrities, and I noticed what they did to like avoid that weirdness, which was they would just immediately start like turning the conversation to the person who's like geeking out on them. Just be like, oh, like, what do you do? And like, where are you from? And it kind of makes it a little more human and less odd.
I mean, I'm getting there as well, you know. It's funny, actually. I judge my interactions as if I did well or not, you know, because I don't want someone to like not be like, oh man, like, I met Jack and like wasn't like, he was like didn't have a good interaction or anything like that. So, and honestly, my wife will always critique every single interaction. And I'll be like, come on, like, give me a little bit of a break. So I think I'm getting better at it. It's just wild, but it's fun. So I'm not complaining.
So I have to broach this topic because, you know, my audience definitely has some sports fans and some baseball fans and even a couple of Phillies fans. But I think a lot of them fall into the kind of, you know, conventional view of either just disinterest, but certainly... I mean, you could take like the most common charge, this one from my wife, that baseball's boring. So my view is that I get that in theory, but I can't relate to it in practice. But I think this is my theory of why people think that, because I made the point that like, I found the game kind of just okay when I wasn't invested in it. And I think about it sort of like reading a book, where if I get invested and start caring about the characters, then everything that happens to them, I'm on the edge of my seat. Cause what I find is I'm sitting to watch like a game in May, you know, that doesn't really matter in the scheme of things. And every pitch there's a knot in my stomach and I'm like waiting for either, you know, elation or disaster. And it's because I just so much care about it. And so it's kind of like, what you need to do is build like your connection to a team, build your kind of knowledge of the game. And that the more you have that, the more like thrilling and exciting it gets. And I think it's the most high tension game because everything can change so fast. And, you know, it's not like, I mean, look, other sports have amazing comebacks and things, but there's nothing like a game, you know, 10 to 2, and then things change even down to like the final innings. So what's your take on what you find exciting about baseball and what you connect to into it, and maybe any thoughts you have on why not only do some people not like it, which that's always going to happen, but I mean, unfortunately, we're seeing kind of like, it's not like when I was a kid where everybody loved baseball. And if they didn't, it was at least the way basketball is now. It was like a cultural touchstone that everybody would be talking about.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is that I never, like, for me, baseball has always been, it feels like number three in the country, you know, and I talked to so many older people just through callers or hosts of the station that are like, wow, you know, I used to love baseball, and baseball is the greatest thing ever growing up. And, you know, it's like we treat, you know, Mickey Mantle, like how people look at Brady today and stuff like that, how like they were the guys that were larger in life. It wasn't football, it wasn't basketball, it was baseball players. And I just never experienced that because I always felt like it was number three growing up and whatnot. But for me, I love pitching. Like I think pitching is the coolest thing ever, you know, seeing how guys can kind of command the strike zone and how they make balls move. And honestly, like the way I watch games is like, I will go through the sequence with the pitcher and like, he's calling this here. Like, I think he's setting this up to go to this pitch and stuff like that. So like, when I'm paying attention, that's what I'm doing. Like when I'm having a few beers and just hanging out and like, I'm not die hard, like it's obviously a little different, but like when I actually want to pay attention, I'll try to sequence along with them. But I just think it's the greatest, like at any moment, a guy can just hit a home run or a guy can hit a triple or you can get a big strikeout. And, you know, for all the people that say baseball is boring, like, postseason baseball is like the single most intense thing in the world. I love seeing my two favorite things in sports is obviously a home run at home that can, you know, like I've watched the Schwarber home run like 10,000 times off of Urquidy in Fenway this year, just getting ready for Kyle to be a Philly, hopefully. But like, that's unbelievable. Like that is, and you know, you think about the victory in a Grand Slam. Like you'll never forget those moments. You just never will forget those moments. And then the other thing I love is a pitcher going on the road and shutting up 45,000 fans. Like that is the coolest thing in the world to me. So, you know, the thing about baseball is you're never going to like, there's something that happens every game that you just haven't seen before. Like there's so many things that can happen. You never know day in, day out, is this guy going to throw a no-hitter? Are we going to see Brad Miller hit three home runs in a game? Like, it just puts a smile on my face. I love, and honestly, I know this is like a rambling answer, but just knowing that every night at like 7:05, I can turn on the game and there they're going to be. I think that's cool. I think I just, the season-long grind and like going along the season with the players, you know, you have that, you develop that connection. Like I feel like you feel closer to your baseball team than any other team in your city. You know, for people to talk about, oh, it's lost its national appeal. I think the baseball teams in the sports cities that matter are the team that the fans in that city care the most about. Philly's different because Philly's the Eagles will always be always. But like New York, Chicago, Boston, like those cities love those baseball teams. And maybe if we weren't the losingest franchise in the history of sports, we could have the same connection. But nevertheless, here we are. So that's my long-winded answer on why I love baseball.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with all of that. Was the point I was going to make? Oh, just that kind of regularity of it. So like the last 2 years, or I guess, yeah, the last 2 years have been the first where like I work for myself and don't have to answer to anybody. And the greatest feeling is it's like midday Thursday and oh, baseball game's on. I'm just going to go down to my living room and like watch it when I'm, you know, quote, supposed to be working. Mm-hmm. And it's just this kind of like ongoing thread in life instead of like the thing I set aside my Sundays for, which has its appeal too, right? Like it's basically like, okay, I'm going to go see my favorite band in concert every week. Like if you're watching football, but just have this ongoing story that's unraveling. And I compare everything to novels. And so like, to me, you know, a great thriller is going to keep me up at night and on the edge of my seat. But at the end of the day, I still kind of know that, you know, if it's a Jack Reacher novel, Jack Reacher is going to survive at the end and like kill the bad guy. The cool drama of baseball and the heartbreaking drama is that you have that same feeling, except you literally and legitimately have no idea how it's going to play out. And so just the highs and lows are just much more intense.
Yeah. And especially with this team, it's like, it's just like, how are they going to let me down tonight? It's just, I've said it on a podcast a couple of times, but like, I miss the feeling of being let down by the Phillies. Like I really do, you know, just like, it's like one of those things I just can't describe. I thought I was feeling it a couple weeks ago with an Eagles game. But like, it felt like every night, like, oh, well, how are they going to blow it tonight? And then, you know, when they come back, and I always think of like those that series against the Nationals where they keep coming back, and it's like, let's go, this is awesome. So it just, you know, seeing a pitcher begin to crumble and being able to take advantage of that, I don't know, there's something special about late innings, and it always makes me feel terrible when they lose. And even when they lose, like I feel like baseball is the one sport where like they could lose by 10 and lose by one and you feel just as bad with each one. Like there's never a loss. It's like, it's okay for me, at least. Like for me, it's like, oh, they're all just equally as brutal. So
there are better and worse ones. There was a Braves one this year where it just kept going. I forget which one, but like it kind of mid season, I think, where they just went back and forth and back and forth, and it looked like they were going to pull it out and then lost it. That's
probably the Hector. It was probably the Hector game that JT called a 0-2 fastball to Pablo Sandoval, who can only hit fastballs, and he hit it like 450 feet. It was probably that game. Not that I'd forgotten it or anything, but it was one of those brutal Phils losses.
Yeah, and so I do find myself questioning at times, given the kind of intensity of the downsides. So, I mean, if you've ever played the game Risk, I almost lost a relationship back in the day because of Risk. Because it's what I realized, it's a game where like it's long drawn out death. And you can definitely have this experience of like, I mean, what was it? Two seasons ago, it's not a real season, but still there was this period where it looked like the Phillies were going to be able to sneak in to the fake playoffs because, you know, like they were letting all of these teams in, and then they just managed to go on this run that just seemed to last forever of loss after loss after loss, and only had to win one more game and didn't win that game. Mm-hmm. And there's times like that where I've like, my wife has really asked me like, why do you do this to yourself? Like maybe somebody like Jack doesn't have a choice. That's his life. And but you deliberately cultivated this as a hobby. Yeah. And I do consider it an open question of is this really adding value? But at the end of the day, when things go well, even if it's not a full season, like, you know, Bryce Harper wins the MVP, or you just pull out that one game that looked like a clear loss, like those moments are just amazing. And then like being part of this universe, right? Like meeting other fans and being able to have just really cool conversations about it. I find at the end of the day, yeah, it's worth it. But man, sometimes I really do wonder.
Yeah. I mean, it's been, I think, four straight, just absolutely brutal Septembers. I think about 2018. Yeah. 2018. There were like seven games up heading into September. And I went on my honeymoon with Jill down to Costa Rica. And I remember sitting there on my porch and I was watching Scherzer Nola. Cause like, I'm not missing Scherzer Nola. Like there's just no way. It's a big game. But they blew that year. They went out to Colorado, and I'll never forget Vince Velasquez just getting torched. And it was like, oh, this is dreadful. And then 2019, same thing, Gabe got fired, all that. Like Septembers have truly been, you know, well, so, yeah, September 2019 was 2019 when they went to Washington for the five game series and they lost every single game. or no, that was 2020 because yes, that happened. And then they went to Tampa and blew the end of that series. And then this last year happened, which, but I don't know, because I feel like it's all worth it because they're eventually going to win again. And I just keep hope that they're eventually going to do it. And when they do, like, it's going to be the happiest. Hopefully Jill's not listening. It'll be like the happiest I'll ever be in my life is this team winning the World Series again. Like, I think the highs make it all worth it. And for me, like, having the high hopes community and having our people and like sort of being the leader of that, you know, it's wonderful. And it's my people and it's our people. And like, it's this really tight community that, you know, it's hopefully getting bigger. I think it is getting bigger. And if they were good, it'd probably be even better. But they'll get there eventually. And I just think that when they're winning, and I felt it during the run, like when I was doing the running and people were just really invested in what I was doing. And I thought it was really cool. And it just got me thinking, you know, what's it going to be like when they actually put this thing together and they're not this like dreadful team that's like barely over 500 and living in purgatory. So, you know, it's my favorite thing to talk about. And I like talking about them, and I like living with them and dying with them, and it's the greatest. And when they win, it'll be a party.
How much do you think? So I've found my favorite, I don't go out a ton. Like, I would rather sit home, write, talk to friends at a restaurant or something. But if I'm going to go out, though, like, there's nothing like being at a baseball field. Like, I went to see the Tigers because I'm outside of Detroit now, and I'm not even really care about them, and I don't even really know the American League that well. So it's not even like I had a lot of context for evaluating it, but it's still just like you're walking into the most beautiful pieces of architecture, in my opinion, on the planet, which are baseball fields. Mm-hmm. And like, it just has this amazing kind of like vibe to it. My personal opinion is, I don't know that like I would love it as much if I didn't have the experience of going to games live. What's your feeling on that?
I think for me, I played it my whole life. I've been around it. It was the first thing that me and my granddad bonded over. Like, I remember I told him I was playing baseball and he got like super excited. And I just remember when I was 9, I think it was my first time ever pitching, and like I pitched really well. And he was like, I didn't know you could do that. I was like, I didn't know I could either. So, you know, it was kind of that thing where it's like, all right, well, you know, I get to talk about it with my granddad, and we get to argue about how Charlie Manuel's an idiot and he's never going to win anything. and then he won the whole thing. And it just became my life. You know, I played it in high school, was lucky enough to play it in college. You know, I learned the ins and outs of the sport. And, you know, for me, there's just no better like feeling, scent, smell, like the dirt, the freshly cut grass. When you get bigger, you know, and you go to Citizens Bank Park, you smell the ballpark, you smell the hot dogs. I mean, it's just the ballpark smell is just a different smell. And I just love being at a baseball field. Like, it was awesome. I love like every little intricacy. Like, I think my favorite thing in baseball is an infielder that has really quick hands that can just like pop and it's out. Like, I just think that's a art to itself. So for me, it's just seeing the little things and knowing why the little things are happening and being around a ballpark. Like, it's just, I've been a baseball guy my whole life. And now, you know, I've kind of made a little career out of it.
Yeah, I mean, the little things, that's such an interesting observation, because I think that's important to any passion. So I have a friend who's a sommelier, and I've always just made this relationship between what he does and baseball, in the sense that, like, you know, if somebody handed me a glass of wine, I would drink and go, oh, I like that, or I don't like that. But it wouldn't be like a big experience. But like, for him, he has so much context to understand like what's going on, where this came from, how this compares to like the year before and the year after. And that context makes the experience this kind of rich, exciting thing for him. And I say it's like the same within baseball. Like you might understand the basic rules, but like the more you understand, like, though that play looked easy, that was incredibly hard, or you know, there was a reason why the guy was standing there. Like all of these little details that help you see more of what's going on, the more you have of that, like the more kind of excitement and joy there is. You mentioned the thing with your grandfather. My son, he's 6 years old. My daughter doesn't care about baseball at all, but my son, we're driving in the car the other day. He goes, "Dad, who do you hate the most in baseball? I hate the Mets the most."
Bad kid. That sounds like a good kid.
And
especially now with Scherzer being there.
Yeah, well, this was before that. So I was like, no, I hate the Braves most, which I have mixed feelings about because I actually like some of the individual players a great deal. But I think the fans is what I object to.
Yeah, well, that's how I felt about that Nationals team. You know, I love Soto. I love Rendon. I love Scherzer. I love Strasburg. And I was like, I know they're the Nationals, but I like that team. I didn't like the Baby Shark guy. That's the only one that bothered me. Gerardo Barros.
So, I mean, one of the things, you know, given the kind of state of baseball and the culture, there's perennial debate about what has to be done to fix the game. I don't have definitive views, except for I am so against the idea that the problem is the length of games. Like, I just am not convinced that shaving 30 minutes off a game makes a big difference in terms of people's passion for it. What are your thoughts?
You know, I can't stand the people who complain about the length of baseball games. Like, for me, it's as simple as, like, I gotta find a way to get the ball and play more. You know, I don't love the three true outcomes. I think that's boring, and I think it hurts the sport. And like, you know, for a long time, the home run was always viewed as the most exciting play in baseball. And my argument was always, I actually think it's a triple. Cause like, imagine you're sitting in the ballpark and a ball, it's like, you get go, like, go, 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 go. Like, that's exciting. Home runs are obviously great, but whatever. So they got to find a way to get the ball and play more. You know, it's pretty much as simple as that. I don't know what it is. I've been a proponent of moving the fences back so that, you know, you have more of those balls in play and guys aren't just trying to hit home runs all the time and stuff like that. But it's a really hard debate. It's a really hard thing to talk about. You know, I don't think there's one simple fix. You know, I think the sport had actually gotten too smart for itself. You know, I sound old when I talk about it, but like, I love a bunt. I love a sacrifice bunt. I love moving runners along. I like seeing if a guy's going to screw up his job. You know, sports and playing sports and being a part of teams, you know, it's all about doing your job. And, you know, I like seeing if a guy's going to be able to execute his job because I know that if he's right or wrong. And baseball, like, in its simplest, it's like a simple game to understand for a lot of people. Like, and a guy not being able to get a bunt down, you know, I envisioned like every old guy in his couch, like fuming about not being able to get the bunt down. So, you know, the little things in baseball I find exciting. And I hate when people say like bunting is stupid. Like, I totally disagree. I think getting
except around Harper tends to bunt in bizarre times.
Oh, it's fair. I just totally, Harper is ridiculous with it. But if, for the most part, like, ball in play, putting pressure on the defense. Like, I don't think that teams put enough pressure on defenses to do their job. Stealing bases should be a part of the game. Simple. I mean, it's exciting. It's fun. It gets guys in scoring position. It's just like all the risk has been taken out of baseball, and part of baseball is risk. Like, you're on first base, you see the pitcher, you know, he's having a tendency, and you just, in your gut, you're like, I'm going to go right here. Like, I can get it. So I think risk has been taken out of it. And I think it's gotten too smart for itself, but you know, it's still a great game. It's the greatest, and you know, it's on them to kind of figure it out. It's not an easy fix, I don't think.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that I am hopeful is I think there's a lot of these young guys who really could cross over into like household name level stars. Like, I mean, as much as I wanted us to beat the Braves, like it was really sad when Acuna got injured. I mean, I think he's one of the most exciting people to watch. Even when he's beating us, they still regard it as a pleasure.
And I don't know. Him hitting, he hit one this year off of, I forget, but it was just like, that's, you can't hit that ball 450. It was like, it was just, it was detrimental. Oh, it was Wheeler. It was Wheeler. He hit the center to right center field, and it was like in the sixth inning. And I was like, this guy is, you shouldn't have done that to that pitch. Like you were just, he is a freak talent. So I am with you.
Yeah. And so I think a lot of, you know, if you have cool personalities in games that are exciting, like if we get those two things, I think, you know, I don't need baseball to be the number one sport in America, but like I've had this fear even since I was a little kid. My biggest fear as a little kid was baseball was going to like go away before I got old enough to play in the majors. And then no, I just turned out not to be any good. Mm-hmm. But all I need is just a solid foundation. And, you know, then we can worry about other things. Like how does a darn team that has every reason that they should be on top manage to fail season after season?
Yeah, I agree. You know, I think that, and especially for Phillies fans, like I grew up, and it would like I will always have a really special connection to Chase, Jimmy, Ryan, you know, Cole, Roy, Cliff, like because those are my guys, and I went through 162 with them. So you know, I it's still the sport I think you connect with the guys the most. Like I feel like I still know the most about those guys more than any other stars in the city. So you know, I think it still has that connection when the team's good. Now when the team's bad, no one cares. I mean, no one's going to remember Tyler Cadell. No one's going to remember, you know, Cam Rupp or, you know, Cody Ashe or players like that. They're just not going to remember those guys. But when the team's good, I still think there's that connection and, you know, they just have to be good. And I think we have the right guy in right field that can kind of lead that movement.
Yeah. So, I mean, as we wrap up, it's, you know, I really became a fan in 93, which is the Phillies went to the World Series. Almost MVP Lenny Dykstra. And I had this opportunity to meet him as a kid when he was going to come sign stuff at King of Prussia Mall. My grandfather drove me out there, but he took too long to leave the house. So by the time we got there, the line was too long. I didn't get to do it. And, you know, fast forward until a couple years ago, he was like signing at some out of the way mall in the middle of Pennsylvania. And I take my kids up there, got my autograph and picture with him. And Tommy Lasorda asked my, I think, 3-year-old son at the time, do you want to get in my truck? And he said, oh, good job. Say no. It was very weird and awkward, but I was like, Landon, if Tommy Lasorda says get in my truck, you say yes and go. But in any case, my kids were like, who is that, daddy? I said about Dykstra, I said that there is the worst human being ever, but a really good baseball player. So like I'm just curious if you want to share one kind of one of your favorite baseball memories.
It is like in turn, like a like playing career or like
anything that comes to mind, because you always have to talk about what we the fans are interested in. I, you know, what is one of those things that you're always connected to when you think of baseball?
I'll never forget my first game at the Vet, and I think it was like 03, maybe. No, yeah, 03 or 02 or whatever. And I just remember walking in like, what is this? Like this is way bigger than it seems like on TV. And on there I still remember my little ticket and had the old Phillies, the alternate blue on it, which I thought was really cool. And I'll never forget throwing on the fast pitch thing, and I think I hit like 39 miles an hour. And I was like, oh, I'm going to be in the big leagues. But I'll never forget, like, just walking around there and going in the little fast pitch thing and, you know, just being able to throw it and, you know, getting my certificate of, like, how hard I threw. And, I guess I haven't really thought about that in a while. I haven't thought about my favorite baseball memory. But I'll never forget my first game at the Vet and like just being there with my grandparents and like a random game versus the Marlins. But like being able to throw at the little fast pitch thing was the coolest thing ever. And that's when I became like obsessed with like, how hard can I throw? I only hit 86, you know, in my peak. But it was still like, I felt like having a big arm was like the coolest thing ever. So I guess that's my favorite baseball memory is that.
Awesome, Jack. Keep it up. Love what you do. Thanks for sharing everything you're learning. And I hope that this time next year, we'll still be basking in the glory of the first World Series in almost a decade and a half.
Well, let's just get a playoff. Let's get a playoff appearance first before we get to World Series stuff.
I'll take it. All right, man. Take care.
Yep. Thanks so much.